And welcome again to Brew Crew Online. I'm Benjamin Orr.
I'm Lou Olson.
And I'm Justin Schultz.
And as you Brewer fans have noted, and as everybody's really noted, when the Brewers signed Kyle Loesch, you know, a lot of people kind of questioned it. A lot of people thought it was really good because they needed a veteran presence. And really, Kyle Loesch has done well, but his record really would not indicate that. He pitched well really all, you know, the entire season so far. Gave up 4 runs against Texas, but he just doesn't seem to get any run support from his team.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about it, I think, a little bit last week. When we signed him, I was not happy about it. We talked about me having non-flashbacks of Jeff Suppan, and it was a very similar type of signing. We signed a guy in his mid to late 30s to a deal that was probably more than he should probably get paid at that point in his career, but the reality is that I feel like his record absolutely does not reflect how well he's pitched. If anything, I feel like he's probably been the most consistent starting pitcher we have. But again, like you said, it's just without the run support, what are you going to do?
Yeah, and I get a question from Beth, and she says basically what Lou just touched on, but he is 4-1. Is this record indicative of his skill as a pitcher, and do you think acquiring him was a good move for the Brewers?
Did you say he's 4-1?
1-4.
The opposite? Yeah, there we go.
1-4.
Flip that. Yeah, I mean, it isn't. It isn't indicative at all. It's a, what are they, what's the word for that? College kids? What's the word I'm looking for?
It's in the semester. My brain's kind of fried.
Oh, come on, Ben. It's a phantasm? No, that's not the word. It's something
I know what you mean.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the word, but I can't think of it. I'm not a lyrical wordsmith. I'm not Kanye West. I think that Kyle Loesch is a good pitcher, and I think that his record will get better, and it will level out by the time the year comes to a close.
Yeah, I gotta agree, but I think he's getting frustrated, as you can tell by his interviews after the game, because he's getting just absolutely no run support, and he needs run support to win, because he's going to give up, 2-3 runs per game, and he needs run support to help him out, and he's just like Zach Greinke from last year. They can't give him any runs, and he's going to lose basically every game if the Brewers can only score 1 run per game.
That's a great parallel to draw, Justin.
We also saw it last year with Marco Estrada. You know, he pitched really well, but he didn't get his first win for a very long time because he just couldn't get the run support. He pitched, you know, 6 innings of, you know, 1-run ball and just couldn't get anything. And I think we're seeing the same thing with Kyle Loesch. I mean, a lot of people, myself included, were very skeptical of the signing because you look at his, you know, years with the Twins, even his, you know, partial years with the Reds and the Phillies and then obviously with St. Louis, he's had varying degrees of success. And really in the past 2 years, 2011, 2012, he's really shined. But, you know, and I don't think it'll be any different for him, and it shouldn't be any different for him with the Brewers because it is another NL Central team, his third. And it's just, you look at when the Brewers don't give him run support, and the next night they give, you know, 10 runs for Giovanni Gallardo or whoever else. And it's just, they couldn't have spread, you know, at least 4 of those runs for Loesch. It's just, I don't understand it. And obviously, you know, pitchers have, you know, those tough luck scenarios, and Loesch has been the victim of that quite a bit. But no, I don't think his record will be very indicative of how he'll do. I mean, 2 of his wins, he only put 2 runs in those outings. So no, I mean, he's losing a lot of tough luck games.
Mirage. It's a mirage. That's the word I was looking for. Ben, I zoned you out the whole time trying to think of that word. The word I was looking for was mirage. I'm sure you made some good points, but I blew it. I was trying to think of the word mirage. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Speaking of starting pitchers, is it time to talk about, like, if this continues, is it time to talk about Rick Kranitz? Because no one on the Brewers, no starting pitcher, can make it past the 7th inning, as it seems. Kyle Loesch has done it probably twice, and then Giovanni has done it once.
I think for Rick, it doesn't help him that the bullpen was so horrible last year. I think if the bullpen would have been a little bit better last year, he probably wouldn't have to worry as much. To be honest with you, I think the whole coaching staff needs to be concerned at this point. Even precious Ron Renicki, I think they all need to be a little bit concerned. But for your pitchers to not ever be able to get to 7 innings, I mean that just can't, you can't sustain a major league bullpen with that kind of workload.
I mean, yes and no, because we have seen some 7 inning games. I mean, we saw one out of Hiram Burgos in his last outing, but you have to realize this is when I say a young rotation, it's guys who haven't really started before. I mean, you have Estrada, who's never really started before. Peralta, this is his first year really starting from the get-go. And Burgos, who was just brought up. So, I mean, there is obvious concern because they are a bit younger. But, I mean, you have a veteran presence with Loesch, and you know he can get there. And Gallardo has just been off to a really, I guess, stumbling out of the gate start. He's had a decent outing or two, but he's just been really battered. So, I mean, at some point, obviously, Rick Kranitz is going to have the finger pointed to him if it's not already. But, you know, like Lou said, it didn't really help him last year that, you know, you put in somebody for the bullpen and it just didn't work. You might as well just put a scarecrow out there on the mound.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, when you talk about Marco Estrada, his road and home splits are amazingly different. Yeah. At home, he has a 9.3 run ERA. On the road, he has a 2.79 ERA. And in both of those, home and away, he's puts 19.1 innings. So maybe he just shouldn't pitch at Miller Park anymore because he gives up 8 home runs since he's pitched there.
Kind of like how Gallardo shouldn't pitch against the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, let's go ahead and just let's break open that egg. That Cardinals series, that was...
brutal.
What's that word?
Disastrous.
Oh, that's right. Bad. Bad is that word. I mean, you know, they had a couple of games there where I thought they were maybe going to pull it out, but there's something about the Cardinals that we just cannot... I don't know if it's them or if it's us. Part of me wants to think that it's the reverse of us against the Pirates, but the other part of me just thinks that it's... the Cardinals are so sound fundamentally that when you make mistakes, they make you pay. Whereas when teams make mistakes against the Brewers, they tend to sort of not capitalize.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that, especially that last game where we lost 10-1. I mean, you have Jaime Garcia pitches 8 innings of one-run ball. It's just, obviously at some point, yeah, we can credit to the fact that Estrada gave up 8 runs and say, oh, well, you know, it was his fault or that, you know, Ramos was 0-3, and Oki went 0-4. But you also have to credit, you know, what the Cardinals have been doing. And it's really odd to see because, you know, Justin and I were talking about this, you know, when we first got into Skype. We were just talking about how you look up and down this Cardinals lineup, and it's a lot of bats that really shouldn't stand out that do. You have John Jay. You have Alan Craig. Obviously, you have threats in Yadier Molina and Carlos Beltran, but it's just... this isn't a lineup that should do that much damage, but yet they always seem to decimate the Brewers.
Plus, when runners are in scoring position, they always come through. I think they have the best batting average in MLB when runners are in scoring position. Yeah, and even if it's just like little infield hits or little flares, everything seems to go perfectly for them when they're playing the Brewers, and it's just infuriating.
It'd be interesting to see over since they won that World Series. Was that 2007? 8? The first one with...
I would say 2007.
It'd be interesting to see how well they hit with runners in scoring position from that season forward. I'm willing to bet it would probably blow our minds.
2006.
Oh, geez. That was a long time ago now. Christ. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, it seems like no matter who you trot out there, no matter what pitches you throw, no matter how much sunscreen you put on the baseball, the Cardinals just, they figure out a way to capitalize once they get runners in scoring position, and for whatever reason, we just can't, they're a riddle that we just can't seem to figure out.
And how about Shelby Miller, really? I mean, how well he's been doing, and he shut the Brewers down, and he's not one of these names you'd expect to really do as well as he is. He's 4-2, an ERA below 2. And I mean, you expect that from guys like Adam Wainwright and Jaime Garcia, but it's just, at some point, is it the fact that the Cardinals are doing well, or is it the fact that the Brewers are just looking so poor in some efforts? I mean, because he's not really somebody you're going to say, oh, wow, you know, I don't really want to face him, but this season, you really don't.
Yeah, Shelby Miller only threw, like, 2 fastballs to the Brewers, and LaCroix said it was very hard to see, and he couldn't get on top of it, and I don't think he had barely any off-speed stuff. And he just blew by his fastballs. Like, for Ryan Braun, like, you know a fastball's coming. It shouldn't be that hard to hit. You're one of the best hitters in all of baseball.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I knew Shelby Miller would be good. That's why he's on my fantasy baseball team. I'm just kidding. I didn't know that. I just took a guess. Shelby Miller, that game was interesting to me because, yeah, he has such good command of those off-speed pitches. And normally, a pitcher can't get away with throwing nothing but, you know, throwing 80 pitches that are off-speed and then two fastballs. That's usually a combination that ends in disaster. But for whatever reason, yeah, he was able to get the changeup. His breaking stuff looked sharp. He had our number that day.
And, you know, hoping going forward, you know, the Brewers are obviously going to have struggles with the Cardinals. They always seem to. But, you know, they've got really 10 games in a row coming up starting tomorrow where they play the Reds for 3 games, the Pirates for 4 games, and St. Louis for 3 games, all on the road. And it's just, this is going to be a really, really tough schedule for the Brewers. Because even after that, they come home to play the Dodgers for 3 games and then the Pirates again. So, I mean, the Brewers are really going to have to try to limit the damage as much as they can upcoming.
If they finish the World Series with a 500 record, they should be extremely ecstatic about it.
I was going to say 4-6. I would be ecstatic. If they got out of there 4-6, I would be more than happy.
Yeah, it's been really, I guess, a bumpy road. And Justin described it best earlier. He said that the Brewers are, you know, bipolar this season because they'll lose so many and then they'll win 9 in a row and then they'll lose some more. I mean, in May, they only have 1 win. So, I mean, it's just, where does this really stop? Because consistency doesn't really seem to factor in with this team a lot. And obviously, it did last year when they made that nice run to almost get into the playoffs. But this year, it's just like, to one extreme to another. It's just, you don't really know when it's going to stop.
But I think people are trying to jump the ship a little too early, because in 2011, when they're their great season, they didn't get over 500 until they're like 22-21. So it took them a while to get going, but once they did, they never looked back. So hopefully, fingers crossed, they can do it again this year.
Yeah, what's frustrating right now is that as a fan and as people like us, as you watch every game, the talent is there. That is not the issue. The issue is, can they win enough games to sneak into the playoffs and then get hot right as they're going into the playoffs? Because if you guys have noticed over the last, I would say, decade, the team that goes into the playoffs with a little bit of a hot streak seems to win the World Series. What you do in the regular season is irrelevant at that point. But if you can sneak into the playoffs and get hot at just that right time, looking at that Brewers lineup, there is absolutely no reason that they could not get hot in October, make a run, and win the World Series.
Yeah, just
as
like,
I look at this lineup today.
Just like Detroit did last year. Like, they were supposed to be like this great team that was like 30 games over 500, but they were just barely over 500, but they came in hot during the playoffs, and they end up getting into the World Series. And even though they lost, they still did extremely well toward the end.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is you look at teams that are supposed to be really good and don't pan out. Like, you know, obviously Toronto Blue Jays, they haven't done really well. But, you know, it still is early May, and, you know, the season is still very young. So, obviously, the Brewers have a lot of time to come back from that. They're only 15-17, only 2 games below 500. But, no, I have absolutely no doubts in my mind that they can make some sort of run for the playoffs. Because, you know, Lou's right, the talent is here. You look up and down this lineup and how powerful it is. You have Oki who can get on base seemingly all the time. You have Gene Segura who has just been killing the ball. You have Ryan Braun, Aramis Ramirez, Jonathan Lucroy, Carlos Gomez. I mean, even Ricky Weeks still has the power there. And he can steal bases. So, I mean, there is a lot of talent in the lineup. And even pitching-wise, you know, with the combination of Gallardo and Loesch, I mean, that should be a 1-2 punch.
Yeah, what's frustrating at this very moment, you know, as opposed to last week, I think last week I said what has been fun is that we've seen them at their absolute worst and at their absolute best. Well, now for the last week, we've seen them at their absolute most mediocre. You know, they're just playing okay baseball, and the Milwaukee Brewers of 2013, their okay isn't good enough. They need to be a little bit better than okay, because everyone else in the division is okay. So even the Cubs are just adequate. So you have to be a little bit better than okay, otherwise the Reds are going to overtake you, the Pirates are going to overtake you, the Cardinals are going to overtake you. The Cubs aren't going to overtake you, but they might make you nervous a little bit.
Yeah, even the Cubs just beat the Cardinals 2 days ago. It's something we couldn't do at Miller Park.
Right. So, I mean, you have to... without the consistency, which, you know, like Justin said, the bipolar disorder, you know, they have pills for that. We should consider, you know, forcing them to put that in their Gatorade so that they could, you know, not be terrible sometimes and awesome other times. But, you know, the good news is that we are seeing good things every day. Carlos Gomez is playing well every day. Aramis Ramirez has been good since he's been back. You know, there are still, even with how bad that Cardinals series was, there are still good things happening. And if they were a terrible team, those good things wouldn't be happening. They would just suck all across the board. They would be the Marlins. They would be the Astros. You know, they would be the Royals. But they're not. And I think that's something we have to sort of hold on to this early in the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's always something to get discouraged about at this point. You know, maybe it's something the bipolar pills and the Gatorade might help. And, you know, I mean, anything at this point, because you see so many extremes from things from, you know, we need to DFA this guy, we need to fire Ron Renicki. It's just, you see so many extremes. And it's just so many people are falling off and losing hope. And I'm looking at the calendar and it's only May 9th. So I don't really get it because you have so long of a season that needs to play out. I mean, that's literally why you get to game 162 and the season still isn't decided at that point. Obviously the Brewers aren't playing as well as we'd like them to, but, you know, there's a reason why they're professionals and we're not. You know, we can complain and pinpoint every little thing that they do wrong, but, you know, in the end, they're humans just like you and I are, you know.
Yeah, just imagine where the Brewers would be at if it wasn't for that 9-game winning streak. Honestly, yeah. They would be 10 games under 500 right now.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, a part of this really, because I'm going to move on to another question we have, has been John Axford. He's been a very interesting case because lost his job, and I don't know if this is a temporary thing, if this is a permanent thing, to Jim Henderson. Hasn't really, I guess, for lack of a better word, done well. He hasn't done poorly, but he was doing great for a while, gave up a run against the Dodgers, gave up 3 runs against the Pirates, then in his last outing gave up a run against the Cardinals. And the question we have is from Aaron Sommers from Fansided. He's the editorial director of Fansided MLB, and he writes for Call It to the Pen. He wants to know, what's the fame of John Axford, and we need to know about his mustache. So,
Well, you've come to the right place.
Yes.
Well, he doesn't have a mustache anymore, Aaron. As many of you may know, that he sort of did away with the sweet handlebar mustache, and now he's evolved more into what I've been calling the prospector beard. This doesn't pan out.
It's Ben back?
Yes,
I am. Ben, are you back? Oh, good. You didn't miss anything, especially not me cussing.
Okay. I started recording when you said Grizzly Adams beard, so
yeah, you got back at a good time.
Axford, I don't know. He's an interesting character. Because it's hard to tell really what's going to happen with him. Because while Renicki was, I guess for a better term, kind of wanting to put him back in the role.
Hold on real quick, Ben. I don't want to cut you off. Hold your thought. Can we all agree that Ron Renicki is terrible at managing that bullpen?
I think he's terrible at managing a lot of things, but the bullpen specifically, yes.
Ben?
Yes and no. I think he's terrible at managing pitch counts.
Ah, okay. Now you've just defined it, but all fair. Okay, continue, Ben. My apologies.
That's okay. Axford is interesting because Renicki wanted to put him back there. Axford said, you know, Henderson's the guy. Basically, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And Henderson's been doing well in that role. I mean, 7 saves, ERA of 1.29, and, you know, he just looks comfortable out on the mound.
Yeah, he does, and I agree with Axford that why change up things when things are working pretty well, but Axford, I don't think his confidence is going to get back until he gets his closing role back.
Yeah. Justin, your amazing idea that Ben completely missed, so Ben, this next part won't make any sense, but I think if you put him in a situation where he's able to do what he's used to, which is pitch in the ninth inning, try to get, you know, mow people down 1-2-3 with that fastball and that curveball, it is going to build his confidence, and then him setting up Henderson could be dangerous. do you guys remember in 2011 when K-Rod and Axford were like the most fearsome 1-2 punch in late games?
They were lethal.
Awesome. That was some of the most fun baseball, because if you got a lead to the seventh, that thing was not going anywhere unless you were playing in the playoffs. But that's neither here nor there. I'm not here to talk about that, those painful open wounds that I still have. But if you could have Axford, you know, throwing 97, 98 mile an hour heat, followed up with Henderson and his barrage of, I don't even know what to call it. He's not a power pitcher. He's not a finesse pitcher. He's just a dude. Can I just call him a dude pitcher?
Yes.
Yeah. Jim Henderson is a dude pitcher. He just goes out there. He has confidence. He forces guys to put the bat on the ball. He doesn't strike out a ton of batters, but he gets the job done. And so it's the Trevor Hoffman thing. You just get the job done, you move on, and that's really what we need to get back to. And the team will be better if Axford can pitch better in the eighth.
Yeah,
but that won't happen.
The one thing I noticed about Jen Axford is his velocity has been down a bit. And he and Ron Renneke have said, oh, it's just a mechanical issue that was the same as last year. But if it's the same as last year and you know what it is, why don't you just fix it?
Ah, the million-dollar question.
Obviously, they don't know what's going on. Otherwise, they would have fixed it by now.
Yeah, because it's just, you can keep saying, oh, well, it's this, it's this, it's this. Well, you can keep saying that until, you know, it really gets flat, because after some point, you're like, okay, it's not that anymore. Or if it was that, it should have been fixed a long time ago, like you just said. So whatever the problem is with Axford, it's really hard to pinpoint. I don't know that he'll ever be the closer again. I'm not saying I don't want him to be. I'm not saying he can't. But at the current, you know, state of the Brewers, really, it's hard to tell if he's really going to go back to the role anytime soon.
Can I just say something quick? People need to stop booing John Axford.
Yes.
Honestly, that just needs to stop.
You know what? And I don't love Ricky Weeks either, but we got to stop booing Ricky Weeks, because nothing is more detrimental to a guy who's pooping the bed than booing him after every freaking at bat. We need to not do that.
And be so worried about today's results and maybe look for the future and hopefully he'll get better.
Because you know what? I drunkenly wrote it in an article. John Axford doesn't come to your work and boo at you when you screw up TPS reports. So don't do it to him. Ricky Weeks doesn't come to your work dressed like the Predator monster and look over your shoulder and boo at you when you don't file something correctly. So let them do their job. Nobody likes to get booed and told how crappy they are at their job every time they try to do it. So let's cut them some slack.
Just remember how dominant of a closer John Axford was, what he did for the Brewers, and remember when Ricky Weeks was an all-star, and just remember that, and don't boo him for his results now when there's a long, long season.
I'm not going to lie, if Ricky Week came into my work dressed as a thing from Predator, that'd be pretty cool.
He doesn't have far to go. The hair is already there, so he wouldn't need, like, the wig extension. He would just have to put the mask on.
Which I think is his problem. It's his hair.
Be the hair.
When he came up, he just had a normal haircut. It was like a buzz cut. But now, ever since he grew out those dreads, he's been swinging and missing more than ever. His bat speed has slowed down because of his long hair.
I think that if he just took a few minutes, hopped in the shower, shampooed that stuff, he'd really have something.
No, in Ricky Weeks, you know, we all have been talking about him for weeks, literally. I love making that pun.
That pun was intended. Don't lie about it.
It was. You know, we've been talking about him for a while now, really interviewing the Brew, and it's just, how do you really go about, well, not us, but how does he really go about changing his approach to the plate? Is it taking more pitches? Is it swinging less? Is it trying to get walked more? Like, I don't know what he does. I mean, he's been getting on base a lot. His on base percentage is 301, but his average is just not there. Already has 39 strikeouts. It's just, you don't want to see him fail or do bad. You obviously want to see him do really well. But
He has 39 strikeouts already?
Yes.
Yeah, that's one a day.
And you're just like, at some point, this has got to change, and I don't know if you give him a few days off. Like, what do you do about him?
I already talked about it last week, Ben. I think that they should have gave him a day or two off a while ago. At a certain point, you just have to, as the coach, you have to grow a pair, and you have to say, look, man, you need to sit down. You're doing more harm than you're doing good. you know, I've always kind of not been a big fan of Ricky Weeks, and I know that the last few weeks I've kind of been opposed to him, but it's gotten to a point now where I want him to do better, because if this is sort of the end of the Ricky Weeks era, I don't want it to go down like that. You never want it to go down like that. You know, you don't want him to leave town batting 180. I think the problem is the same as it was last week when we talked. It's pitch recognition. For whatever reason, he just isn't seeing the ball correctly.
And as most of you know, I'm a diehard Ricky Weeks fan. Have been since he came up, but I think one of the problems he's having is he's taking the first pitch every time, and usually it's right down the middle. So he's down 0-1 to begin almost every at-bat. And when he's down 0-1, I think he's batting under 100 the rest of the way.
And that's pitch recognition.
Yes.
And you know that. It's if you know that they're just going to throw you gas on that first pitch, prep yourself. He used to be a free swinger. Look at what Carlos Gomez is doing, and Yunieski Betancourt. I hate saying that out loud. Yunieski Betancourt are doing free swinging. They're destroying pitchers. Newsflash. Yunieski Betancourt has the most home runs on the team. Everyone take a second to let that soak in.
But yet, Ricky Weeks has a higher on-base percentage. Can you believe that?
How does this happen?
And yet, Ricky Weeks is tied with Marco Estrada for the most strikeouts, too.
Buzzing.
But moving down Ricky Weeks in the lineup is not going to help him find his swing. He's going to get worse pitches to hit.
Obviously, it didn't help him. I mean, we tried it yesterday, right? They moved him to 7 yesterday?
Yep.
Yeah, and it didn't work. It wasn't better. I think that there is an answer, there is a solution, but I don't get paid to make those decisions. Ron Renneke gets paid to make those decisions. I get paid nothing, so I just get to sit here and make fun and speculate.
And when he had his 3-for-5 game with that home run, I thought, okay, you're finally going to get going, but I guess it was just a blind squirrel finding a nut.
But, you know, Justin, we talked about that last week. That was a bad pitch. He just is so strong that he was able to muscle that thing out of there. It wasn't a good pitch.
Yeah.
It was off the plate. It was low. He just kind of, for whatever reason that day, he was all jacked up on Mountain Dew and Ritalin, and he just jacked that thing to the opposite field. I mean, I think that there was a period of time there, too, where his power didn't seem to be there. He was having a hard time getting balls out of the infield, and at least that seems to be getting better. He's putting better strokes on the ball. He's just hitting them right at outfielders.
Yeah, and, you know, we obviously know Ricky Weeks has power. I mean, he's capable of hitting 20 or more home runs in a season. And it's just, you don't want to see a guy who has, obviously, all-star caliber, you know, talent in him struggle like this, because it's not really good for the team overall, because if, you know, God forbid, Braun go into his slump, or, you know, Segura or Gomez or Ramirez go into a slump, you need somebody else as reinforcement. And obviously, you know, a good portion of the lineup can carry the weight right now, but at some point, Ricky Weeks has got to really step in and just, you know, say, hey, obviously, you know, I can do this, but, you know, I can't try to carry all the weight by myself. And we know Ricky Weeks isn't going to be a 270 hitter. We know that. We shouldn't expect that from him. You know, he's going to be 240, 250, if that, but he has the power there. And it's just, I don't really get all the free Scooter for Ricky, because Scooter isn't that much better than Ricky. He hits for more contact, but defensively, he's about where Ricky is. He doesn't have as much.
I think he's worse defensively than Ricky.
Yeah, and I mean, we talked about this last week with Scooter, and I mean, well, he does have the contact. It's just, you know, power's not there, and power really isn't necessarily something that you need, but if you're replacing Ricky Weeks' bat, it'd be a nice addition.
Yeah, I started Free Scooter. That's my fault, guys. Hashtag Free Scooter. That was on me.
Do you still believe that?
To a point. Actually, Colin brought up last week, and I think he's right. I think that come September, I will feel more confident that Scooter is ready to sort of take over the role at second base. You're right. Right now, he is not better defensively. However, I do think that there's something to be said about a young man who can hit at every single level of minor league baseball. I don't think that that's a fluke. I don't think that that's some sort of, mirage. There we go. See, I almost lost the word again. I don't think that it's a mirage. I think that Scooter Gennett and Gene Segura are the future of our middle infield. But for right now, we can't. I don't think you can call him up right now.
Okay, but to your point about Jeanette being able to hit on every single level, Chris Davis crushed the ball at every level. He batted like 380 in AAA, and then He got called up, got like three hits, did nothing.
But he also didn't get the opportunity to play every day. So, I mean, your point is well taken, Justin. You're certainly not wrong. But I think that if we really had the opportunity to give Chris Davis a shot to play every day, maybe he would.
Speaking of Davis, in AAA right now, he's batting 2-for-24 since he's been returned to the minors.
Ooh.
Yeah.
No, that's not so good. But, you know, Justin, I'm the first one to admit it. I'm wrong a lot. So, I mean, maybe Scooter comes up and Scooter isn't any better, and we are having this same conversation 3 years down the road, and there's some new guy who's blowing our minds in the minor leagues. I don't know. What I do know is that what Ricky Weeks is doing right now doesn't work. It isn't working. He's causing more damage offensively than he is good. His on-base is at 300, which is nice. But again, he just – every time he gets up, I can usually call what's going to happen, a ground out or a strikeout, and I'm right 50% of the time.
I want to know if Ricky Weeks feels comfortable at the plate. Like he feels good at the swing.
He definitely doesn't. You can tell.
Because I remember last year when Corey Hart, 2011, when Corey Hart just was in this awful slump when he came back, and they changed his stance, and he said it was the most uncomfortable he's ever been, but he hit 3 home runs that game. So maybe they just need to fix his swing, just fix his stance a little bit and see what happens.
One thing that I have noticed over the last few weeks, and it might be a trick of my mind, is that it seems like he's holding the bat lower and lower. Because, you know, he has that weird stance where his elbows kind of stick out in front of him. Both of his elbows are kind of out, and he waggles that bat. It seems like his elbows are getting lower and lower.
I also think that he shakes the bat less than he did when he first came up.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't wiggle it back and forth anymore that much. Because when he first came up, it was more violent than it is now.
And now I think he's just trying too hard, too. There is something to be... to be said for being in a slump and trying to force your way out of it. But that's why I think they just need to give him a day or two off. I mean, just let him take a day and rest. I mean, they even Ryan Braun takes a day off every once in a while. I mean, it's something that I think he needs right now. He just needs to take a day off. And who knows, maybe that will be all it takes to kind of jumpstart him. But to let him keep going up there and watching fastballs come right down the middle and swinging at breaking balls in the dirt is just... it's painful. It's getting to a point where it's hard to watch.
You know, and it's not any consolation, really, nor should it be. But, I mean, Jeff Bianchi is back. So, I mean, Ron Renicki can follow him to put him at second base if he decides that Ricky needs a day off. So it's not like, you know, there's no option. It's not like the Brewers have to scramble to put somebody there. They have somebody that can go there. Now it's just a matter of Ron Renicki actually manning up and doing it.
Yeah, I make fart sounds about Jeff Bianchi. That's how I feel about that, really.
We can even put Uni B at second base and have Maldonado or Lally play first.
Sure. I like that better. Bianchi to me is, take him or leave him. We talked about it before we started the podcast. He's one of those guys where if he was gone tomorrow, I don't know that I would notice he was gone. I just wouldn't notice. In fact, I don't even know that I knew that he was really a backup because I don't think I've seen him play very much recently. So,
he's gotten like 2 at bats so far.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, why wouldn't you just put Uni B at second and Maldonado at first? Those two guys are both better hitters from what I can tell.
Yeah.
So why won't you just roll that out?
Yeah, you know, Maldonado playing first really is something that, you know, I had written an article about it months ago, and nobody really seemed to like the idea, but I've never really been opposed to it because you have Maldonado's bat in the lineup, and you have Lucroy's bat in the lineup. I think you have two catchers that can really hit the ball, you know, really well that a lot of catchers and other teams can't do. So, I mean, I never really was opposed to the idea. And even now, I think it's something they still can at least flirt around with.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem. What they're doing at first base right now is fine. It's not great, but it's not bad. They're not, you know, none of the guys they're putting down there are making errors or, you know, they're not blowing games wide open by being stupid. So, I don't have a problem with how they're platooning first base right now. Martin Maldonado does a nice job. I got no beef.
Me neither.
Was there anything else? Really? Any more questions we had?
No, I think that those were the only two.
Yep.
Hey, if you're listening to this, send us some questions on Twitter. Don't be shy. As you can tell, we're pretty friendly guys. Don't be shy about it.
Yeah, we don't bite. At least not now.
Yeah. I mean, I can get a little unruly from time to time, but I certainly won't bite.
Yeah,
it's a pretty far reach.
Unless the Brewers lose like 32 in a row, I mean, I think we'll be good.
If the Brewers lose 32 in a row, we're going to have a way more enjoyable podcast because your old pal Lou is going to be drunk as a skunk for 32 consecutive days.
That would be interesting. I'm not going to lie.
Wouldn't be the first time. You forget. I was 21 starting in, let's see, 2005. So, let's see, I had 2006 and 2007 to really prepare myself for the eventual downfall of the organization again.
Always positive reinforcement right there.
There you go.
Yeah, I might be bad luck when it comes to Brewers games because I've been to about 7, and I think they've won 2 of them. Like, I went to 3 of the 4 Cardinals games, and they lost all of them, so maybe I just need to stop going to the Brewers games, and maybe they'll start winning.
Yeah, that might be helpful. Sad story about me. The first time that I saw the Brewers win was when I was 26 years old. And it was like maybe my 15th or – no, I was winning. It was like my 23rd game. They finally won. But they had lost every game of my life that I had been to up until that point.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was not an enjoyable day. And it was the day that Barry Bonds hit home run number cheater 400-743, cheater, pumpkin eater, whatever number it was. I don't care. But then it was fun because the Bonds on Bonds series was on ESPN at that exact moment in time. And so we were sitting in the bleachers. It was me and my dad and my now brother-in-law. And the guys sitting around us were chanting Bonds on Bonds at Barry Bonds. He didn't like that, turns out. Even he knew that that show sucked.
I have a question for you two.
Oh, okay.
Do you see the Brewers making any moves at the trade deadline?
I think it's too early to tell right now.
Outrageous, Ben. man up, Ben. Take a stand.
No.
I can't tell you to man up and then you say no with a question mark.
No, I can't really say that I do see them making any moves. I don't think that they're really in buyer or seller mode. I mean, obviously last year was a bit different story because, you know, we knew we weren't going to keep Zach Greinke, so obviously we tried to trade him for what we could, and obviously we got the better end of the deal out of that. But I don't think the Brewers have anything really to trade or really anything that needs an actual, you know, void that needs filled in. Maybe a starting pitcher if somebody doesn't pan out, if Willie Peralta doesn't really do well or Mercury Strada falls off. But I don't really see that happening.
So well, what about Corey Hart's going to be a free agent after this year? What about him?
I was going to lead towards Corey Hart or Ramos Ramirez because I know none of us wants to hear about Ramos Ramirez, but, you know, he has an escalating contract. So he made the least amount last year, he makes the second most this year, and next year he makes an insane amount of money. It isn't that far-fetched that if they are out of the race and a contender comes calling, let's say we tank the month of May, it is not unrealistic for us to go have our Brewers outing after the 4th of July weekend and Aramis Ramirez to be gone. It isn't unrealistic. And same thing with Corey Hart. It would not shock me if both of those guys were gone, if they're out of the race.
I think it'll be a big mistake if we let Corey Hart walk, though. I want an extension. And I listened to your guys last week, and it seemed like not many of you wanted to see him back, but I definitely...
Oh, I don't think that's the case. I just think none of us think that the offer's going to come. I would like Corey Hart to be around. I like Corey Hart. I would love for him to be back, but I have a hard time believing that they're going to open their wallets after his... I don't know, man. We aren't very good at keeping free agents, historically.
Plus, our farm system is basically empty. We have no depth anywhere, and maybe we need to build it up again.
You know, we talk about Corey Hart. Between him and Aramis Ramirez, probably Hart I would see being traded, just because, I guess, of age and, I guess, prone to injury. Aramis Ramirez is a little bit more prone to injury than Corey Hart is. And the fact that, you know, the extension talks have not been on the table for him. And that has to be a little bit of a concern for Corey Hart and for most Brewers fans. You know, I'm with Lou here. I don't want to see Corey Hart walk. I want to see Corey Hart continue to be a Brewer. But, you know, I guess it boils down to what the needs are of the team at that time. Because you do have, and I know he might be a year or two off, and a lot of people are high on his horse, is Hunter Morris. I mean, you do have him eventually. And, you know, Scooter eventually, so you have people who could possibly go to third as well, if need be. I definitely probably see Corey Hart being traded more so than Aramis Ramirez, just because you have to look at, I guess, injury history and age. And I guess
Hunter Morris is more of a Matt LaPorta or Brad Nelson. People that just ripped it in minors and then do nothing in the majors.
You know, I was just going to tell you guys a quick, fun little story. So I lived in Seattle for 6 years, and the Mariners went out and made this big deal for Cliff Lee, and then the team was terrible, and they went out and they traded with the Rangers. They traded Cliff Lee, and they got this guy named Justin Smoke. And Justin Smoke was like the best AAA hitter that anyone had ever seen. He was a can't-miss, slam-dunk prospect. He was going to be the first baseman in the future. You know what Justin Smoke does now? No, I don't know either. That's why I was asking. I have no idea. And it's just one of those things where, to me, Corey Hart is one of those guys where you know what you're getting. There aren't a lot of surprises from Corey Hart. He's fairly consistent for the most part. And so to risk letting him walk because you think that Hunter Morris is going to be a can't-miss slam-dunk prospect is foolish. The reason that prospects are prospects is because you never have any idea. Do you think that if the Angels knew what Gene Segura was going to turn into this year, that they would have let him go? Probably not.
Especially for a rental like Zach Greinke.
Right. I mean, yeah, they don't even have him anymore. It's kind of one of those things where you never know until you put the guy on the field. I'm sure that in the back of Uncle Mark and Uncle Doug's minds, which is what I call Atanasio and Melvin, just so everybody knows, Uncle Mark and Uncle Doug, in the back of their minds, they've got to be thinking, oh, I can't wait to get Hunter Morris into the big leagues. But if that's what they're thinking, and that is their logic for letting Corey Hart walk, it's dumb. It's a dumb reason to do it.
And by the way, Justin Smoke is batting .236 with one home run and five RBIs.
Can't miss prospect, Justin. Can't miss. Slam dunk. You can't miss with that guy and his .236 batting average.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's hard to tell what prospects will do. And you look more so that trade that I made the Angels for great, you know, Greinke going to the Angels, and we got Gene Segura, and we got two of their better, you know, reliever prospects, and even one who can start, you know, and
I'm excited about both those guys.
Helwig and Mania. So, I mean, you know, you get those guys up there. I mean, the Angels have got to be kicking themselves now, because you have Eric Ibar there who can't really, I guess, for a sense, stay healthy and then be really produced like Gene Segura can. Then again, it's only been, you know, a month with Gene Segura, so you'd have to wonder, without playing the downer card, how long this is going to last.
That trade could be the best trade Doug Melvin has ever made.
I think even just at this point it is.
Yeah.
I think about some of the other trades he's made, and I mean, it definitely is. At least if because I think Helwig will be in the majors first, and I think that he will be able to contribute right away, and then. Now I'm drawing a blank. Ben, what's his name?
Oriel Pena.
Thank you, Pena. I think Pena will be good, but, you know, we'll have to see. That one I'm less confident about. But Helwig, I mean, what he did in the spring was pretty impressive.
Yeah, they're grooming Helwig more for a starter and Pena as a reliever, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, but again, you know, I feel like right now, that lower level of the minor league, that single and double A area, we have so many starting pitching prospects now that there are going to be a large handful that just they're not going to make it. But I hope Helwig isn't one. I don't think he will be, but again, prospects are prospects because we just don't know.
That is very true, because it's just, you don't want to take a gamble on it either, because then you look foolish if it doesn't turn out well, but then if it turns out well, you look like a genius. But, for you know, going back to the Corey Hart thing, it's just, Hart isn't somebody you want to see walk by any means. And if he does walk, it's because the Brewers really messed that up.
Yeah, I agree. I really want to see Hart back, even though he hates spring training, apparently because he just always gets injured, so he never is involved in spring training. But I think one of the reasons why the Brewers might not offer him a contract is because he's so injury-prone.
Nobody likes spring training. Everybody likes spring training. Everybody would go. But guys are always like, oh, I hurt my forehead. Oh, I can't, yeah. My face is injured. Oh, I can't come to spring training. You know what? I'll be there a couple weeks before the season starts, though. Don't worry. I mean, spring training, you know, before I wrote for Reviewing the Brew, I used to think that spring training was extremely meaningful. And then I started writing for Reviewing the Brew and paying more attention to spring training, and I realized that it really doesn't mean poo diddly. I was going to say a different word. It's because it's essentially a chance for regular fans to get a glimpse at the future. That's really all it is. You don't get to see your starters every day. You don't, you know, it's just sort of a show. It's a parade for all the you know, all the blue hairs who want to go down to Arizona and Florida and enjoy the sun for the, you know, for the spring. It's just a mirage. That's the word of this podcast, mirage.
Well, spring training is useful for like 2 to 3 weeks, but after that, it just gets old, players get sick of it, and they just want to get going. They need to cut down spring training for sure.
But they never will, because Bud Selig makes money on spring training,
yep.
And as we all know, Bud Selig loves money.
Yeah, that is true.
And hates Ryan Braun.
He does hate Ryan Braun. I don't know why, but man, you would think that he would like Ryan Braun, you know, because of the fact that Bud Selig bought the Brewers. You'd think that he would love Ryan Braun, but nope, not the case.
Well, according to some cynics, that's why Ryan Braun got off on the steroids, was because Bud Selig used to own him.
Mm-hmm, sure thing. Because, you know, after this most recent event, we saw how much Bud really liked Ryan Braun, so sure. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. So, by the way, every opportunity I get, I'd like to point out that Major League Baseball did try to purchase medical records, which is legal in the United States. Bud Selig tried to buy medical records. That's illegal.
There's not a vendetta against all those players.
No. Because, you know, the truth is that he would rather have a guy like Francisco Rodriguez beat his wife than he would have steroids in his game. Because it's all about keeping the game clean. That's really what it's all about, isn't it, guys?
You really hate K-Rod, don't you?
Who?
You really hate K-Rod, don't you?
I have no use for the guy. I think he's a terrible person. I don't think he's a particularly good pitcher anymore. I'd like to emphasize the anymore part. So I have no use for the guy. Any guy who not only beats his wife, but beats his wife's father is a pretty bad person, and I don't want him around.
I put up a poll on Reviewing the Brew about would you like to see K-Rod back in the Brewers' bullpen, and the voting is very close. I thought it would be unequivocally no, but plenty of people said yes.
Well, I hope that they're not right, because I don't want to see him. And if I do see him, I'm not going to be terribly happy about it. But at least I'll have a punching bag, because right now I'm running out of punching bags. It's no fun punching on Ricky Weeks anymore, because now I kind of feel bad and I want him to do good. And Unieski Betancourt used to be my favorite punching bag, but can't do that.
You can't do that when he's leading the team in home runs and is tied with RBIs with Ryan Braun.
And whenever he gets up and runners are on base, I'm actually excited. That's how bad things have got, Ben. That's how far I've fallen off my personal wagon. Is that when Betancourt comes to the plate and there are runners on scoring position, I feel good about it.
His magic just doesn't stop.
Thank you, Justin. That's what we should be testing for.
Magic.
I'm going to get on my soapbox again. We need to be testing for magic. HGH is a thing of the past. It's the era of Harry Potter and vampires who sparkle in the sunlight. We need to be testing for magic. It's the only possible explanation for Unieski Betancourt, because he's not taking steroids. His neck is the same size as it's always been.
Barry Bonds.
Yeah, that neck to skull ratio got awfully thick towards the end.
You think that's a measurement? They should use that as a measurement in baseball: skull to neck ratio.
It probably should be during the steroids era. Jason Giambi too. I remember looking at pictures of Jason Giambi when he was with the A's versus when he was with the Yankees. I remember just going, "Ooh, your neck got big."
Yeah,
last time I checked, there aren't a ton of neck muscles that you should be working out or that you can work out, so that's usually a telltale sign. Which is why I don't think Ryan Braun took steroids, is because his neck is still quite tiny.
And plus, he still hit the ball like crazy the next year.
Yeah. Well,
he's always hit like that, too. I mean,
yeah.
So, well, right now, he's sort of flailing at that ball like it's a pigeon. I don't know what he's doing right now.
He's raised his batting average a lot, though.
Yeah, it's getting better, but you know he's still striking out a lot, and yeah. I don't like that.
He hasn't hit a home run for a long time either.
That doesn't bother me. I don't mind the not hitting home runs. I mind the strikeouts though for him, because that's very unlike him.
Yeah, his pitch recognition isn't good either right now.
Speaking of strikeouts, Unieski Betancourt actually has some of the lowest on the team aside from Jonathan Lucroy and Norichika Aoki.
Get out of here, Ben. Are you lying to me with your numbers?
No, Aoki struck out 8 times. Lucroy struck out 12 times. Betancourt struck out 13 times.
Jeez.
Everybody else struck out more than Betancourt. That's including Segura, Gomez, Braun, Gonzalez, even Maldonado.
The only bad thing you can say about UniB is he doesn't walk at all, and his on-base percentage.
Yeah, he never walks.
God awful.
And that, but you know what? At what point do we just kind of go, I mean, I'm so happy with how he's playing right now, I don't even care.
Yeah, because who cares when he's hitting home runs and driving.
I remember 2011, and it's like, he didn't walk, he struck out, he didn't hit home runs. All he did was ground into double plays. So it's like, I think about that, and now I think about this, and it's kind of like, I don't care that you don't walk, because as long as we don't revert to the old days, I'm cool.
And I have to give credit to Ned Yost for UniB's resurgence, because when UniB was cut last year from the Royals, Ned Yost said, UniB is part of the losing culture here in Kansas City. And so UniB took it upon himself to learn English so he could respond to things like that, and he started hitting well when he came to the Phillies in spring training, and then he went to Milwaukee. So, Ned Yost, thank you very much. You finally did
something
right.
I know you can't see it, but I'm drinking an adult beverage in my Brewers officially MLB-licensed mug, and I'm raising it to Ned Yost. I always liked Ned Yost, so...
I did not.
Yeah, I liked Ned Yost. For what he was. He was way better than Ken Maka.
Oh, don't even get me started.
Ken Maka is like my Darth Vader.
At least Ned Yost argued for his players and showed some fire, which Renicky cannot do.
In fact, I sometimes wondered if Ken Maka had a pulse. I would watch the games and be like, Ken.
You there?
Kenny? Ken. Mr. Maka? Sir? Yeah, nothing. That guy, man, what a horrible, horrible decision for a coach.
You know, another interesting thing about Inovesky Betancourt, always still beating his horse. The most home runs he's ever had in his season was back in 2010 with the Royals. He had 16. Right now, he has 8.
So, yeah, I'm pretty sure he's going to eclipse. Well, hold on. I'm knocking on my wood table. Well, I hope that he eclipses that.
It's going to be hard for him to eclipse it because when Corey Hart gets back, he's not going to find much playing time.
Well, and that, you know, that's something that I worry about too, because we talked about this last week, so I don't want to beat it too hard, but I mean, what if we get to the end of the month and Uni's got 13, 14 home runs, he's driven in 45 runs, and is still batting 285? Do you really sit that type of offensive weapon? Do you sit your home run leader in favor of a guy who's been on, you know, who hasn't played in 4 months?
Well, I think what they should do, I can't believe I'm saying this, but what they should do if UniB is still hitting like this, they got to sit down Weeks and just leave Harden. But I don't think Renicky will even think about doing that.
Wow, Justin, I can't believe you said that.
Yeah, I feel really bad about
that. That's how I felt last week about talking positively about Betancourt, so welcome to my world, bud. I can't believe you said that. God love you, Justin.
I hate myself.
You're a good man. Don't hate yourself. Reality's reality, bud. Don't hate yourself. I only give you a hard time about the Ricky Weeks stuff, Justin, because I admire your positive attitude about him.
I try.
And now I'm a bitter, jaded old man.
It's just scary when you wake up and you realize the reality is Unesco Betancourt. Like, you're like, oh, okay. He leads the team in departments that usually are dominated by Ryan Braun. But it's different because we're not used to that. And, you know, you have to wonder how long it's going to last. But, hey, at this rate, why question it?
Yeah, I mean, don't fight it. I mean, if it, like we talked about before, if it isn't broke, don't fix it. So, you know, there will be decisions that have to be made should Unesco Betancourt continue to do what he's doing. And some of us may not like the end game, but
I don't think he can continue his pace, though.
I don't think so either, but there's always that possibility that somehow in his brain he figured out the game of baseball over the last year and a half, and now all of a sudden this is just who he is. And then at which point you have to kind of go, well, what if he has a career year? Then what do you do at the end of the season? You just let him walk away? I mean, they probably will, but, I mean, man, it's a weird situation to consider.
I don't know, when you get to the end of September and they start chanting MVP every time he gets up, then you're like, okay, what do you do now?
If that happens, I might run away to that cabin we talked about last week. I will just seclude myself, and because I won't understand the world anymore. I just won't. I won't be able to comprehend the world that I live in where Brewers fans are chanting MVP at Unesco Betancourt as he walks into the batter's box, batting in the number 8 spot.
What we should do is go to Las Vegas and put our bets on UDB winning the MVP. You know how much money we would get if
I don't. You know what, Justin? I don't even think that those odds exist.
Well, they shouldn't make them.
I don't think those odds are made because I don't think anyone believes that that will happen. However, if we could find a casino stupid enough to allow this bet to take place, maybe that's not a bad idea.
We'd be rich men.
I had my boss was in Las Vegas last week, and I told him he stayed at the Aria in Las Vegas, which I don't know if you two gentlemen have ever been to Vegas. You're a little young, but soon you'll get to go. He stayed at the Aria, and their bets on the Brewers winning the World Series, I was surprised because I was going to have him put money down, but they were 1 out of 18.
Really?
18 to 1, which isn't that bad.
I thought
at all. Yeah, I was, because I told him, I was like, if it's any more than 25 to 1, place a bet for me. But they were 18 to 1 odds. And I was like, oh, well, that's pretty good. Those Vegas guys, they're not in the business of losing a ton of money, so maybe they know something that we don't.
Maybe we should bring them in to manage a team, see what happens for a few days.
No, I wouldn't recommend that. Well, Bud Selig would probably like that, though, because they would make him so much money. And Pete Rose would start managing teams again, so that'd be good.
And remember, kids, Bud Selig loves money. We have to keep pointing that out.
Above all else, Bud Selig loves money.
Had to stress the loves.
And he loves to catch those cheaters, those steroid users. How dare they?
Those rascals.
How dare they sully the goodness of his game that over the decades has been riddled with cheating, stealing, theft, murder. How dare he? How dare those people?
And drunk driving, don't forget about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that very rarely happens, Ben. That only happens 40 or 50 times a season.
yeah, only.
That's a small number.
When you think about how many players there are in Major League Baseball, you know, that's pretty good, 40 or 50.
Yeah, what happens to your own, you know, starting pitcher, then it's just like...
Right. So, but, yeah.
Yeah, so I think the last thing we want to get into for tonight is hitter and pitcher of the week. So if one of you fine gentlemen wants to start that off.
I'll go first. Hitter of the week, definitely got to be Carlos Gomez. He's just absolutely ripping the ball off. He had 4 hits the other night, and he's leading the league in not only batting average, but also in WAR. So, by far...
I always support a man who has a solid WAR.
And pitcher of the week, I say Alfredo Figueroa.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's out of the limb there because
you just wanted to say Alfredo Figueroa. Come on, tell the
truth. Yes, that opinion. He needs to pitch more. He did really well last night in two innings of work, and I'm just impressed by him.
Yeah, Justin, I can't deny Carlos Gomez. It should be unanimous. I don't know how you pick anybody else this week. It was a rough week. He was the one shining beacon of light. I put in my article this week, he either needs to have a bigger fro or he needs to get a bigger helmet, because sometimes he swings and the helmet pops off, he slides and the helmet pops off. Something's got to change with that, because I can't deal with that anymore.
That's just his trademark.
That's a terrible trademark to have. My trademark is my equipment doesn't fit. It's just my thing. Pants are 5 sizes too big. Shirt's way too big. Gloves don't fit. Hat's too large. Anyway, pitcher of the week. It wasn't a very good week for pitchers. I'll go with Jim Henderson, just because he didn't get worse. He stayed the course. And, so that's where I'm going to sit for this week.
Yeah, I'm going to have to... agree with Lou on both parts. First with, actually, and Justin for Carlos Gomez. I mean, there really is no other hitter in this lineup. I guess if you want to throw around Ramirez's name into the ring, then sure. But Carlos Gomez, I mean, he was literally a home run shy of the cycle in yesterday's game. Just really destroying everything he's seeing. Stealing the bases left and right. Driving in runs, scoring runs, hitting home runs. I mean, just... is delivering it all. And pitching-wise, yeah, I have to go with Henderson because, I mean, like Lou said, he's the only one that hasn't really done anything bad. He got his first loss, though, against St. Louis.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he picked up the save against Texas, has 7 on the year, and still has a very, you know, very good ERA to look at for a reliever, especially a closer. So, really can't complain about the job he's done there.
How about we start doing, and I know, Ben, this is your show, but how about we start doing a GOAT of the week? Because if we talk about the good players, we should also recognize one player who maybe didn't quite meet our standards for the week. So what do you guys got for GOAT of the week?
My GOAT of the week is not because he underperformed. My GOAT of the week is Gene Segura, just because of his base running mistake last night that would have scored them the run, maybe got a rally going.
Yeah.
Rounding third, going to score easy, but then the catcher duped him out or something. He slowed up, and then a good throw from center field gunned him.
Yeah, that's a good choice, Justin. Ben?
I guess because he's kind of a scapegoat, at least from what I can think of. Just Alex Gonzalez is just, he hasn't done anything. He'll have a hit here occasionally. He did have a nice three-hit game against the Dodgers, but, you know, that was end of April. And he can't seem to put anything together. He's a nice stopgap to have, but it's just his batting lineup really isn't helping anything at all.
And he's doing worse than Ricky.
Yeah, that's, I mean, there's point. That. I mean, his on-base percentage is a measly .212.
You're both wrong. The correct answer is Eric Gagne. Eric Gagne. No, I'm just kidding.
Not see that one coming.
Yeah, you did not see that coming. Mine is Marco Estrada, just because normally I wouldn't pick a starting pitcher, but, boy, he was really bad. I mean, it was like watching a T-ball game. It was just ugly. What was his final line? Do you guys remember? It was 8 runs.
6 hits.
6 hits. Yeah.
5
I mean,
walks.
Anytime that you give up, anytime you give up more runs than hits, you had a bad day. I would also like to give a runner-up for Go to the Week to the entire Brewers team for last night's affair for out-hitting the Rangers, but only scoring one run.
Pathetic.
Yeah. That is 2012 Brewers baseball to the max. I think it was one run on 13 hits? 12 hits?
12 hits.
Yeah, one run on 12 hits. That is Kansas City Royals, Miami Marlins-esque.
Doesn't even seem possible.
It really doesn't. Like, you try to do the math of a 9-inning game, you were averaging over one hit per inning, and you only score one run. It just kind of boggles the mind a little bit.
8 runners left on base, too, so can't really just ignore that either. But no, Estrada, though, 13 runs and only 8 and 1/3 innings pitched in his last 2 outings.
Yeah, so he's definitely my goat of the week.
He's been striking out a nice amount of people, but he's been tagged for quite a lot.
It's either he strikes out someone or gives up a long ball.
Yeah, that seems to be the case.
So hopefully the Brewers can turn it around, but they're going to have a heck of a time in the Great American Ballpark.
It's not going to get any easier these next 10 days, so they better strap it on and figure something out.
Yeah, because if they don't, then they're going to be not sitting pretty at all.
No.
Cubs might overtake them.
Oh, don't even joke. That's not even funny. There's nothing funny about what you just said. You know what? You know what's interesting here? I'll bring this up to you guys just because, I mean, we're all baseball fans, so I can talk about this. I work in Illinois, and a lot of my fellow office mates yesterday were talking about what the Cubs should do with Carlos Marmol, and they all wanted to trade him. And I said, well, how do you trade something that no one wants? I was like, you have to give them something that they want. Nobody's going to want Carlos Marmol. I told them they should just cut him. What do you guys think they should do? Because he's terrible.
What they should have done was traded him before the season even started.
Yeah, that would have been a good
worse.
Idea.
But I think it's the same situation as Axford. Yeah, there's nothing really can do with him. No one wants him. Well, the Brewers aren't even thinking about trading Axford, first of all. But you just got to pitch him when they have huge leads, even though that's very rare, and just see if he gets his game back.
I think comparing Marmol to Axford's kind of almost a slap in the face to Axford.
Yes.
Marmol has just not been good. You know, because the Cubs went out and they signed, Kyuji Fujikawa from one of the Japanese teams. And, you know, he was the equivalent of, like, a Trevor Hoffman in Japan. And I just don't get why you go out and spend all that money to sign him and you don't use him as a closer, you use him as the eighth inning. I think he's on the DL now. But then he started becoming the closer. But, you know, he said that, hey, you know, once I come back, you know, if you want to use Marmol as the closer, go ahead. I don't care. But if you're Theo Epstein, you have to look at this team and be like, okay, yeah, we need to either trade Carlos Marmol or just get rid of him. Because, you know, Dale Swaim can only do so much. But, you know, you'd think with how much success Theo Epstein had in Boston that he'd be able to translate some of that to Chicago. But keeping guys like Carlos Marmol really isn't helping their case. I just feel like he had his course, and now, you know, ever since 2011, Marmol has just not been able to put anything together.
The Cubs are going to be contenders in 2 to 3 years, and I think that's going to be in large part of because of Theo Epstein. The Cubs are really lucky to have him.
Yeah, they're very fortunate to have him. But I would love it if things didn't work out so that we could fire Ron Reneke and get Dale Swaim back.
I happened to favorite this tweet the other day from John Heyman, writing for CBS, and he said, excuse Dale Swaim for saying Travis Wood is the best starter in baseball. Managing the Cubs can be a bit disorienting.
That's awesome.
That's sad but true. Hey, you know what? At least we don't write for Cubby's Crib, guys. No offense to the guys at Cubby's Crib, but at least we're not Cubs fans.
I can't even believe Dale Swaim said that.
I can believe that Dale Swaim, he's a straight shooter. I want him to coach the Brewers again. I still don't understand why they didn't let him just coach even, like, how was Ken Maka, in what parallel universe made of chocolate and lollipops with rainbows made of unicorns, did they think that Ken Maka was a better choice than Dale Swaim?
Yeah, I don't know.
You can't predict baseball.
I sometimes try to, and it never goes well.
It's one of those things you try to predict it, and your brain just kind of fizzes out, and you're just like,
I feel like there's only one universe where Ken Maka is a better option than Dale Swaim, and that's Communist Russia. I feel like that's the only place where Ken Maka, like, they look at the two guys and they go, yes, Vivo takes the quiet one. Like, that's the only option that in my brain that logically makes sense.
Yeah, but I remember hearing that Ken Maka barely even talked to his players. And Dale Swaim is kind of like Ron Reneke. He's a player's manager.
Do you guys remember Ken Maka press conferences? They'd be like, Ken, what did you think about the eighth inning tonight? It was good. Okay.
Doesn't know how to elaborate.
Could you elaborate? It was better than good. Okay, that's it. And then the guy who was in charge of PR would just probably be like, all right, those are all the questions Mr. Maka's taking tonight. Wait, that was two questions. Ken Maka sucked.
It's more like a question and then a follow-up to it. It's not even two entire questions.
Ken Maka press conferences were a joke. At least Ron Reneke has a little bit of personality, but he kind of, sometimes he is that same thing where he just kind of, I don't know. I don't know if he is used to coaching chess or what, but just kind of.
Are there really such things as chess coaches?
I don't know. I saw that movie Searching for Bobby Fischer when I was a kid, and he had a chess coach, so maybe.
Must be a thing.
Then again,
when I was a kid, I also thought that you could slap shot a goalie into the goal thanks to Mighty Ducks, so what do I know?
Great movies.
Terrific movies that teach you nothing about real life.
And how games don't actually work.
Right. The game doesn't actually work that way.
So aside from the Ken Maka beating and the Ricky Weeks hoping and all the good jazz we've incorporated into this podcast, is there anything else you, John, would like to add?
I would like to add, I wrote an article before the season started about how I thought Aoki would be the next, or at least a similar player to Ichiro Suzuki. I would like to publicly denounce that article and say that I was smoking a lot of marijuana at that point in time, and that was not true. I don't know why I thought that. That was untrue.
Aoki's doing well, though.
He's doing well, but he is certainly not the next Ichiro.
Yeah, he's not. He's never going to be
30. No, and I don't know what I was thinking. So again, I would like to publicly denounce that article.
Well, then, if we're in the business of denouncing articles, before the season started, I predicted that Ricky Weeks would be an All-Star. And even if that's 300 the rest of the way before the All-Star break, I don't think he's going to be an All-Star.
I don't either.
But if there was a second-half All-Star, I'm still riding my wagon on that.
I love that you are so optimistic, Justin. It makes me happy.
Only when it comes to Ricky Weeks.
Ben, any articles that you would like to denounce? You make some bold statements from time to time.
I haven't lately because all I've been doing is news articles. I got to go back and see if there's anything I want to denounce because there probably is. probably everything I've ever written.
So
but...
come back next week and denounce an article for me.
That's our new thing.
denounce things you've written in the past.
I remember I wrote something, like, I had crazy predictions what the Brewers would do. I said Giovanni Gallardo would win. Oh, okay, yeah, I do want to denounce one now. I wrote this end of December because I wanted to make it for 2013, and I said something along the lines that, let me find it real quick. Yeah, Giovanni Gallardo would win, I believe, the Cy Young. And now I'm like, no.
No.
He has to play St. Louis. That's not going to happen.
As long as he's in the NL Central, that isn't going to happen.
I don't think he'll ever be a top 10 finisher.
No, I mean, if
no,
he's...
No, probably not.
As long as, you know, Cueto, Hamels, Kane, Kershaw are still pitching in the NL, I don't think Gallardo stands a chance.
Speaking of which, Justin, I loved your article on Giovanni Gallardo not being an ace. I've never thought that he was an ace.
I got a lot of flack for that.
Yeah, and I don't know why. I tried to defend you everywhere I could. I don't know why you got flack for that. That was unnecessary and pointless because he isn't an ace. He just isn't. I don't know why people thought he was, but he is not. Especially after we had Zach Greinke. Why would anyone think that Giovanni Gallardo was an ace?
I remember reading in the Sports Illustrated season preview how, of team by team, they had this rival scout square up the Brewers, and one of them said that Giovanni Gallardo is a Cy Young candidate every year. And I was like, no,
starting,
he's never...
Starting which year? Starting which year? Like 2015?
Yeah, because he has never been even close to a Cy Young candidate, in my opinion.
I can't even think of a year that he was even in the top five of the voting.
Yeah.
I don't know in what universe... If this was in Sports Illustrated? Like,
yeah, it was like a rival scout said stuff about every team, and I don't know who it was because they are now anonymous.
Now, if you said that ESPN said that, I would say, well, yes, of course, that's probably true. But
Sports Illustrated. At least it wasn't like an SI writer, it was just a scout. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Then that's forgivable.
Yeah.
There's also another article I found that I kind of wanted to announce as well. And one of these wacky predictions I came up with was Willie Peralta will win the NL Rookie of the Year. That's
Boy,
not
that,
gonna...
Yeah, that was... You were reaching on that one.
I thought he was going to be a stud when the season started, because I was really impressed what he did last year.
Here's the thing about Willie Peralta, guys, is that it's hard to be a dominant stud pitcher when you only really have three pitches. That's the problem. You can be, but it's really, really difficult. And that's why I never thought... I think he'll be good. I still think that he'll be a nice, like, three or four in a rotation pitcher. But he'll never be, like, he'll never be a stud starter. He needs another pitch. He needs a fourth pitch. And without it, he will just kind of languish in being good, but never great.
Yeah, he's not Clayton Kershaw who can get by like that.
Well, right. And Clayton Kershaw's, like, he was that one, like, that one exception where he only has three pitches, but... Yeah. They're all so good that he doesn't need another pitch. Willie Peralta needs a fourth pitch.
Definitely.
He needs to work on his walks. I mean, you look at last year, he pitched a little bit in September. 23 strikeouts, but 11 walks. This year, 20 strikeouts, 14 walks.
Whew.
So, I mean, his strikeout-to-walk ratio is not good.
Yeah, it's not good at all.
So he needs to work on the walks as well. I mean, he's been walking two or three batters a game, and, I mean, those are just free passes at that point. And the way the Brewers starters have gone, really aside from Kyle Loesch, that's not something you really want to happen. I mean, his last outing against Texas, he didn't have any. But it's just, that's not really ideal.
Yeah. He looked good in that Texas game, actually. I thought he did a nice job. That's a tough lineup still. Even without Josh Hamilton, that's still a really tough lineup to pitch against.
I have one quick thing to say about John Axford. A good thing to say about him. Last year, walks were a huge problem for him. This year, he's only issued 4 walks, which I think is incredible for him. He's actually finding the strike zone, but hitters are just hitting it out of the park.
I would like to say to John that we love you, John, and your friends at Reviewing the Brew would like you to come back. So walk towards the light and come back to us.
We know you can do it.
The true fans don't boo you.
I will never boo John, partially because he's my friend, but partially because booing players is stupid.
Agreed.
Unless they're someone else's players, in which case, boo away.
Like Yadier Molina.
Boo Yadier Molina.
Especially Yadier Molina. And destroy the Cardinals in general.
Yeah, I boo most of those guys.
Yeah, me and my girlfriend were at the Brewers Cardinals game, and she looks over at me and she's like, "Is it okay if I'm a Yadier Molina fan?" And I said, "If you are, we're done."
You know, I said last week, and I'm not really proud of it, but when I listened to it again, I remembered saying it, you know, but if Yadier Molina was a Brewer, like, we would all worship the ground that that guy walks on.
Yeah, we would love him.
Yeah, that's the reality of being a fan. But that's a pretty serious ultimatum. Luckily for me, my wife, she could not give two. Oh, see, I caught myself that time. She does not give two poops about baseball players. So.
Yeah, just.
She just looked at me from the kitchen and pointed at me with a spatula. I don't know what she's doing in there, but she agreed with whatever I just said.
Yeah, Justin, I can definitely see why, you know, that would be a bit of an ultimatum there.
So. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's serious business. But your girlfriend is a diehard Brewers fan. Why would she even joke about something
she's
like that?
She's obsessed with David Freese, too. She thinks he's so sexy.
You need to work on that. That is not right. Yeah, something
before,
about that is fundamentally...
She knew nothing about the Brewers, but now she's a diehard, so...
Look what you've done.
Yeah.
You've ruined... You've corrupted another youth, brought them into our...
recruiting to the Brewers fan.
You are recruiting. Yeah, I'll applaud you slightly. It's a half applause, Justin, because you brought her in, but now you've ruined her for life.
Well, she kind of ruined herself if she wants to be attracted to David Freese.
Yeah, if she wants to fraternize with those Cardinals miscreants, then... I don't know what you're gonna do. That's a problem.
Yeah, it is a problem. It sucks.
It does suck. So wait, so if she's into David Freese and she's into Yadier Molina, what is holding her back from being into Pirates or Cubs or God forbid Cincinnati Reds?
She has a little respect for the Reds because a foul ball was hit to her by the Ryan Hannigan, who was a catcher.
Oh.
And okay. So she got a foul ball from him. But other than that, she doesn't care about him.
But it's not like he intentionally hit it to her.
Yeah, I know.
So, I mean, let's...
Before that game, I did promise her I'd get her a foul ball, and then Ryan Hannigan hit me one, so...
There you go. Well, at least you delivered on that promise.
Yeah.
But next time, you need to be like, listen here, darling. I don't know what you call her. Make up some nickname. My sweetums. The next time that you say anything that involves a St. Louis Cardinal, I am going to smash something that you care about dearly.
Well, I mean, our one saving grace is at least she's best friends with John Axford now.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, that's true. Yep. And I mean, he's like the coolest cat on earth. He and I are friends also, but I mean, he and her are like best friends. Do you know that Colin put her tweet in an article?
We both saw that today.
Yeah, that's nice. It's the highest form of flattery, getting your tweets in an article. Mm-hmm. Wait, is that the highest form of flattery? I feel like it's not, but it's still a compliment.
Well, no, it's the highest form of flattery when you get treated by John Axford.
Wait, and didn't it involve a threesome? Am I remembering this correctly?
Okay. He said threesome or a crowd.
Yeah, because my girlfriend tweeted, "All I want to do is be best friends with John Axford." Then he said, "Consider it done." And then I'm like, "Well, I guess John Axford is best friends with my girlfriend. Does that leave me the odd man out?" And then he's like, "Three is never a company."
Oh, okay. All right, good. All right. See, I didn't have the other information leading up to that. I just had that tweet.
But then
okay.
Axford said that people ran with it in that way.
I see. But that's not what he meant. I know. I've known John for many years. That's not what he meant. He's a very polite individual. I would never make such comments.
Yes.
You know, his son has a mustache. His son's like 1 and a half. He already has a mustache.
Incredible.
Was he born with it?
No, that's not true. I just found a picture of a baby with a mustache and put it up there when he had his first son.
Oh.
So that didn't actually happen. I'm sorry to disappoint everybody. I lied. That's not true.
You know, the one person I would expect to have a son with a mustache, sure they're born, is probably Michael Olmstead.
You know, I've never really seen a good picture of Michael Olmstead, but yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean,
you think his kid would be born with a mustache?
Yes.
I mean, probably flannel, because I think Michael Olmstead's part lumberjack.
His mustache would be bigger than his head.
Wow.
See, he doesn't drink Gatorade. He drinks maple syrup.
Wow.
That's a power.
Where are you guys getting this from? You guys need to take over and start doing Michael Olmstead facts. I retired the John Axford facts. You guys need to take over.
I mean, I don't know if it's actually factual. He hasn't commented and said whether or not, but I think it's pretty clear. I mean,
most Canadians feed their children maple syrup instead of milk, so that's a straight fact.
Of course, I don't know if he's Canadian. I think he might be. No, he's from California.
That's almost Canadian.
Basically.
It's the same first two letters, so it's like that's half Canadian. Need. Yeah, he's half Canadian. Well, if he's from California, then he's feeding the baby wheatgrass and sushi. And the baby will have a hipster mustache, a little pencil-thin John Waters mustache.
Because clearly everybody in California has hipster mustaches.
Yeah. This is why you can't have me on the podcast, Ben. This has gone on for way too long, and now we're talking about hipster mustaches.
I was just going to say, and we've digressed.
Which is always going to happen as long as I'm on the podcast.
It could be much worse. You know,
that's true. We could still be talking about how hot David Freeze is.
It's only fun if we digress.
It is only fun if we digress. So hopefully people have listened this far. If they have...
Thank you.
You are a saint.
Trooper.
You are a saint. Same bad time, same bad channel next week, guys?
Hopefully. I have to work, but...
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Because you told me before the show how to, how to do stuff.
I'm sure you remember that perfectly.
Justin, he cut out. He doesn't know that I didn't hear anything that he said. Remember, his phone disconnected, so he doesn't already know. He also doesn't know that I swore earlier in the show when his phone cut out, so we need to not tell him that. Ben, are you still there?
I
blew it. Just so you know, Ben, when you go back and listen, the swear word I said was on the swearing scale was probably the lowest of possible things I could have said.
Lowest
it's
of
not
lows?
That.
Okay.
I don't even remember what it was.
It's an A with $2 signs after it.
Okay.
So we're good. Right? We're good on
yeah,
that.
We're solid.
Right?
We're cool.
And it was quick. I snuck it in there and yeah.
You know, to be quite honest, when I go back this way, I have to put this now in two parts, I don't even know if it's gonna be in there, so I think we're all good with that.
Sweet. Are you going to have to edit this? Because this has gone on for an entirely way too long amount of time.
I'm going to have to edit it because I'm going to piece part one and part two together because when I cut out, because my internet hates me. Because my internet hates me and my computer can only do so much.
Yeah, I have a question. I have a question for you guys.
Yeah.
You guys, I haven't been on the Reviewing the Brew very long, but do you guys live blog at all during games?
Colin usually does. Well, Colin usually will do it, but he doesn't do it all the time. What the problem is that it's a little tricky, but yeah, I mean, if you wanted to do it, Justin, I would talk to Colin about it because he's done it for a few years now.
Okay.
So back in the days when it was just me and Colin, he would do it. He did it more than he does now. So I would talk to Colin about that.
I just think it'd be a fun thing to do.
Oh, it is.
It is fun usually, but usually when it was just me and Colin back in the day, I was the only one who would chat with him during the games.
Yeah.
It's hard though because you have to keep updating.
Yeah.
But.
He's done it once or twice since I've been here, so he hasn't been able to do it quite as much, and it's understandable. But.
Yeah, but yeah, they are fun. I mean, once you get a lot of people involved, they get really fun. So.
Yeah, well, I think we covered almost everything except for world relations with China.
So. Which we'll save for next week.
Yeah, we need to get into that, economic plans.
Save that for next week. Maybe we can actually get the round table next week if everybody's around.
Hopefully. So.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Well, for those of you still listening, thank you, and stay tuned for next week.